as long as there's going to be money, like the US government and fiat and the US dollar, then there's going to be you're going to be able to use that money and buy Bitcoin, you know. But it's just going to cost you more and more of these, you know, dollars, these US dollars to get the same amount of Bitcoin. So 50 Satoshi is never going to change, but you know, it might go from, you know, one day being $50 to get 50 Satoshi, which would put Bitcoin at $100 million per Bitcoin. Okay. You know, and if the US wants to keep printing money, then, you know, then tomorrow it might be 52 Satoshi or $52 to get your 50 Satoshi. You know, so the value of this, the US dollar is going to continue to decrease, you know, but then one day the idea is that the dollar goes away, or the dollar becomes so hyperinflated that nobody transacts in the dollar. Does that make sense? So
Yeah, like
I,
how just okay,
like
sorry.
if I sell, let's say I sell like some subscription service, right? And I'm like, yo, like you can get my newsletter in your email box, you know, once a month, and it costs you like $10 a month to get it, right? Well, if there's like so much inflation, not even hyperinflation, let's say we're at like 10, 12% a year, every year inflation, right? Well, I don't want to keep getting just $10 because my livelihood, my expenses in my personal life are going to go up, you know, 10% every year. So I need to increase how much I'm charging for my product, you know, 10% every year, right? So that's one aspect I could do. Or I could just say, you know what, I'm gonna charge Satoshis, okay? So I'm gonna charge this much Satoshi per month for my product, and then I don't really have to change that number ever again. You see? Because
Yeah, but does the dollar stabilize?
they can keep in, so they can keep, you know, printing money, but I don't have to change my prices anymore because I operate in Satoshis, you know? So then the idea is eventually everybody starts operating in Satoshis. So you get paid in Satoshis, you pay your employees in Satoshis, you buy products in Satoshis, you know what I mean? And the government can keep printing money in the background, and that's not going to do anything but drive up the quote unquote price of Bitcoin. But the value of Bitcoin is always the same. Like the value of
Okay,
Bitcoin
yeah,
in a very,
it's always the same, but
in a,
not like you're talking about the future. You're talking about when it stabilizes, it will always be the same.
yeah. And in a sense, like in that little hypothetical world where you have 10% inflation, theoretically, the Bitcoin, once we get past the adoption phase, Bitcoin should move an identical price level as the level of fiat inflation. It should be at parity with that level. So if the government prints $10 more of US currency in 1 year, then Bitcoin should go up by $10 in value, 10%, whatever. Does that make sense? It will move in parity with the inflation because it will maintain your purchasing power. And that's why Bitcoin is referred to as a store of value. It's not something that you buy in hopes to get rich one day. It is today because it's in the adoption phase. But in the future, it'll be looked at as this is just a tool to make sure I don't get my wealth and my time and my labor and my energy that I've output into society raped away from me. You know, like if I work all day and I get these US dollars and then tomorrow the US dollars are worth less, I just wasted my existence for the government. I sacrificed myself to this, to this.
I understand the concept of what you're saying. So now think of it like think of it from this avenue, and so we're looking at say just hypothetically 15 years down the road. We'll use 15 years, maybe say 20. Government. So all these businesses are starting to use Bitcoin as a way of transacting. You know, whatever. They're just it's your everyday dollar. However, the government is standing their ground and only wants to pay with the US dollar, which is so inflated that you can hardly get any more Bitcoin at this point. And now would that make it to where everyone in the government would essentially quit and go find a job where they were transacting Bitcoin instead of the US dollar? Because like the
correct. So that's the idea that eventually, and Peter Schiff talks about this a little bit when he says that, because people are like, well, like, won't the government just like, you know, influence these other countries with guns and power to like, you know, keep their system going? And Peter Schiff is like, they won't be able to afford guns and power. They won't be able to afford the gasoline and oil and energy that it takes to drive their fighter jets and their ships.
Unless they're buying into Bitcoin and paying their employees Bitcoin, which would be against their whole.
Yes, which would be at their own demise. So either way, they lose. That's the idea. You see, Bitcoin bans the government in the long run. Either way, the government loses. Because let's say the price of oil in US dollars is going to be like $1,000, you know, a barrel. So what? The government's going to pay $1,000 a barrel to fuel up the fighter jet? And then if it does, then it's like, okay, where does the government get $1,000? Well, what? They're going to print it? You know, like then the price of barrel is going to be $10,000 a barrel. You know, they can never win, because at the that's when you start getting these oil companies who say, oh, we only take Bitcoin now. We only take Satoshi.
It's inevitable that a crypto is going to end up taking over the dollar.
It is inevitable.
It's whether or not it's which crypto is the $1 million question.
No, it's not. It's not the $1 million question, Justin. Which crypto is not the $1 million question? Which? Let me ask you. Which crypto has already achieved $1 trillion market cap? $1 trillion. Bitcoin.
Yeah, but I think that like Musk and all of them say, it's earlier than we realize.
Musk is only saying that so that way he doesn't seem wrong, because he wants to leave his little cop out to be right. But look at his actions. Don't look at what Musk is saying. Yeah, look at his actions. He bought he has $1.5 billion in Bitcoin. He is so pro Bitcoin. This guy has no, think about it, Justin. This guy, Elon Musk, has $0 liquidity. He has been notorious for saying that my entire net worth is in SpaceX and Tesla. Right? And then like a little bit in boring company in Neuralink that's not even worth mentioning, right? So he has put his entire net worth into his two companies, and the mere fact that he has put over 1% of his net worth in Bitcoin, that is mind-boggling. And then on top of that, he put another billion in Bitcoin through Tesla, and then he has, we don't know how much, an undisclosed amount under SpaceX. This guy is so pro Bitcoin, it's not even funny, you know? But of course he's got to say like, oh, but you know, we don't know, because he went on that little Doge rampage for like a couple months. So like, he doesn't want to seem wrong about that. He just wants to like let that fade away, you know? So Bitcoin is, it could operate as the currency you use every day. And then when you put it in your bank account, well, it's going to be your wallet. You are your own bank account with Bitcoin. You don't need a bank. You are your own bank account. Now the question is, we get to this society where there's no more inflation. That's not a story to tell anymore, right? So now when your Satoshis are sitting in your wallet, not doing anything, what are you going to want to do? You're going to want to stocks, businesses, whatever. You're going to want to plow your money into things that create a return on your investment. Interest. You want interest, right?
Yeah.
So you're going to go ahead and you're going to invest to get an ROI, right? So now the question is can I make 5% on my money? Can I make 6, 7, 8%, you know? And now the beautiful thing about this world with no inflation, Justin, is that you don't need crazy investments to get rich. You don't need crazy investments to get wealthy, because when inflation is at zero, now all you have to do, Justin, is if you make 7%, you're doubling your money every 10 years.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
You're not having to pay money into taxes.
Yeah, there's no more taxes because there's no more government. So that's crazy. So 7%. Let's just speak in dollar terms because our brains are still wired that way. Say you have $100,000, you know, at 20 years old, times two. So by 30, you're at 200. By 40, you're at 400. By 50, you're at 800. By 60, you're at 1.6 million.
Yeah, that's like not even good. Like 7% is not like something to be proud of.
Yeah, that's just normal, you know, that's nothing. But that's the beauty of it, is that everybody can become wealthy. And this is the way it used to be back in the day when we were on a gold standard for a little while, you know, is that it wasn't hard to get wealthy. You know, it's hard to get wealthy now it's all about a paradigm. It's all about how you view everything. But when you're viewing, if you're viewing things from the aspect of the internet and how you can blow up in a second, then that's not what we're talking about right now. What I'm talking about is the aspect of fighting inflation, of fighting taxes. Like, these are things you have to fight against. It's like we're swimming up current, you know? Like if you're swimming in a pool, you can just go, you know, but when you're swimming up current, now you have to work twice as hard just to get to where you could be in the first place. And then what does that do? That ruins the entire game now. Hold on. So now when you're swimming up current, this warps the whole game now to where no money goes towards these investments that are going to yield, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7% a year, you know? And well, what happens is that those yields get eaten up to where now they only yield 2%, 1%. Because there's so much money in the system because of the inflation, right? So all those easy investments get eaten up. And this is why, like, Grant Cardone and like the apartments he goes to buy and stuff, he's getting like 3-4% the first year he buys it. That's nothing, you know? But it's a hedge in a sense. He's hedging the inflation. He's trying, at least.
Yeah.
But everybody has to go out on the risk curve is what I'm saying, just to get a yield. So now that safe apartment building investment is only going to yield 3-4%. So now if you want your 7%, you have to go somewhere risky. You see? So you have to go more and more risky in order to get the same amount of yield. And that's equivalent to you swimming extra hard just to fight the current, you know?
Yeah.
And this also goes back to the idea of quality of life. And that's how really I think in my brain with inflation is I look at quality of life, because it's not always about the price going up. I mean, at the end of the day, that's what inflation is, but it's about what's deeper happening in society from the price going up, which is your quality of life deteriorating. You know, when the cereal box gets smaller, but you're paying the same price, you know?
Yeah.
So if I have to go out on the risk curve, that's a deterioration in my quality of life, because now I have to go to sleep at night knowing I hold this riskier asset just to make a bigger yield. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I think the whole inflation thing is, there's always been, inflation has always existed, and it's just amazing. Well, and you know, for a long time, inflation has existed, and it's just amazing that, you know, we view inflation as like the norm, like as a normal thing. But at the same time, I think what we're not seeing is that this inflation that's hitting us right now is not normal. A lot of people aren't seeing that. Maybe people like you and I are, but I think it's people are blind to that right now.
Yeah. And I mean, over the years of society, since like money's been created, we've always gone through these inflation cycles. And the reason is because governments have always controlled the currencies. You see? So like in Rome, this is literally why Rome fell. Like the whole Roman Empire collapsed because of inflation.
Yeah.
So they used to, it was called like clipping coins. So what they would do is they would clip the edge of every coin just a little bit and then keep the gold from that coin that they clipped as the government. So every coin that came into the government's possession, they would just clip a corner of it, you know? And this is the same reason why coins today, like the quarter and like I think the penny and the dime, all these coins we have today, this is why they have
the same material.
No. Yeah, that too, but why they have rigid edges. So quarters have a rigid edge because back when it was real silver, they wanted to make sure that nobody had like sawed off the edge and gotten a little bit of like silver from the coin. Isn't that crazy? Isn't that crazy? Yeah. So
it's messed up.
So first Rome would clip the coins, then they switched completely. They went from gold to silver. So now everything was operating on silver. Then they clipped the silver coins, you know, and then slowly but surely the quality of life of everybody gets deteriorated down to nothing. And then that's where the term bread and circus comes in. Let me just Google this. A diet of entertainment or political policies on which the masses are fed to keep them happy and docile. See? So then Rome, they did the bread and circuses where they would give everybody bread. They would give everybody a circus to watch and try and keep them happy, even though like everything around them was deteriorating. And that's what the government is doing today with, we're going to give you a stimulus check.
Yeah, which the stimulus checks are merely nothing. To me, they're just, it's free money that isn't enough to impact anyone for anything.
Well, no, that's your life. But for a lot of people, for millions of people in the United States, it's everything, you know? And like, that's what's keeping from society from causing an uproar is literally because we have the stimulus checks, and then the unemployment is the real one. The unemployment is what goes on every week. They're giving $300 a week to these people.
Yeah, that's insane.
They extended it. They extended it. And watch, as soon as that's over, that's when we go back to the whole looting. Remember that we had all that looting and stuff, and people walking down San Francisco with boxes of iPads and MacBooks that they just stole from the store.
Yeah.
Remember people were going into they went into like some Chrysler dealership or something. They stole a bunch of Dodge Chargers. They just ran in, grabbed the keys from in the dealership and then went in the parking lot, hit the lock button and stole fucking cars. So that's why you have the bread and circus to keep that from happening. So the government's trying to keep their Ponzi scheme going on and it's just a repeat of history. So then what happens is every single empire that gets like washed over, that becomes like the biggest like world dominant empire, has always been because of inflation. So inflation destroys the government, the state from the inside out. It rots it from the inside out. Because everybody's quality of life deteriorates to a point where they do not care. They do not care, so they go steal a car because their life is so hopeless as it is that they're like, let's just go steal a Dodge Charger because I want a thrill, and they're just so angry, you know?
Yeah.
And like when you hear about in Chicago, I saw something in Chicago, like 30 people died in one night from shootings in one night on the weekend. Like 34 people literally shot in one night. Like, that's crazy.
Yeah, that's unreal.
And a lot of them are just random people just walking down the street getting shot just cuz. Not even like gangs fighting. Like that's because the society has deteriorated so much and there's so little hope now in the society. So as soon as these unemployment checks, you know, run out, which they can't, they can never stop it. They can't stop it. Cause they say, oh, there's 10 million jobs available, but people don't want to work for $10. People don't want to work for $15. You know, like, so it's really sad. And it's just like a constant cycle that keeps happening again and again. But the best part of a society to live at is the beginning of one of these, you know, one of these like cycles.
These shifts. So basically our glory days in the 50s and or 50s and 60s are going to be like our glory days.
Yeah. And then another big aspect to everything is demographics. And yes. Demographics is always, at the end of the day, just comes down to population. Is your population growing or decreasing? And this is the biggest problem. And like that is super scary to this is the biggest thing that keeps Xi Jinping up at night and should be keeping you up at night is the idea that it's not even the idea. It's a fact that we're going to have less and less people in the future. Like the population is not growing exponentially. It is deteriorating. There are more and more old people and there's less and less young people. And this helps the Ponzi scheme of inflation because you have a natural deflation occurring from a decrease of the population. So you have less and less people buying new houses, right? Because you have less and less people hitting their 30s. So then the current houses on the market is enough supply. You know what I mean? So now we can have more inflation without it affecting the price of the house because there's so many more houses on the market. Does that make sense? Like they kind of cancel each other out and it's hard to read. So a lot of like this inflation that the government's been able to get away with has been because of the demographics from the baby boomer era. So the baby boomers, then like we had this massive growth in the United States. And that kind of caused like the 1970s inflation a little bit. You know what I mean? Because you had so many people getting into like that age of their life where they're like spending the most amount of money every year of their life. And then they started getting older and that rate of growth was not maintained, right? So it decreased drastically and it's especially decreasing now. It's kind of scary because less and less people are getting married, less and less people are having kids. It's really scary. It's really sketch. And this is a big problem in China too. Cause in China, they're like, they're going to have this massive demographics problem coming up where they're going to have huge buildings, apartments empty in like
I was watching that video that you sent me of that guy and he kind of talked about that.
Yeah, like demographics is serious and this helps the inflation and the governments, which is annoying, but it's true. And then also technology helps with the whole deflation as well. Because you spend less and less money being entertained than you did 50 years ago. 50 years ago, you're like, oh, let's go to like the roller coaster park and da-da-da-da. Nowadays, you're just like, let's just watch Netflix, you know?
What happens if they come up with cures to like cancer and stuff? Is that going to re-up the population?
That'll slow down the
reproduction.
Well, the problem is that like that'll help like old people. Like so the population itself, you know, might be more stagnant and go down slower, but you know, we're just keeping old people alive, you know.
Yeah.
The real growth is when people are hitting their 20s, 30s, 40s, you know. That's when people are like moving and grooving in society. You know, not when they're 80. When they're 80, they're doing the same thing every day. They're just, you know, wake up, eat, sleep, you know, like they're not that economically like vibrant when you're 80 years old as you are when you're like 30, 40.
Yeah.
So like not really. Like the number may not go down as fast as like it could, but the problem really is people are not having kids. And that's what like that's why China is like, "Oh, they went from one child policy to oh, you can have two children." Then now they're like, "Oh, you can have three children." Now they're like, "You can have as many kids as you fucking want."
That guy, do you remember that guy that the video was talking about with that?
No.
He was saying that when it comes to raising children, these people are having to contemplate how many kids they should have because having to go through the education system and actually pay for any education, they have to basically shell out like it's like a bartering and payment system to where it's like, all right, you say, and he was saying how there's like, say there's 100,000 kids, but there's only 20,000 seats. It's like, you got to do certain things.
Yeah, that's why. Yeah. So I remember hearing that from Manish Prabhai, but I feel like he's like a little bit off. Like, I feel like he's not, I feel like he's trying not to not see the bigger picture there, which is that, because he really likes Tencent. He really likes Alibaba as investments. They're a big part of his portfolio or not. And so he's like kind of got to like, you know, brainwash himself a little bit. But I think he's a little bit right. But I think the main reason why like the whole education thing got destroyed in China was because a lot of, like Kathy Wood, for example, Kathy Wood's daughter was a teacher for China through like online learning. And she's an American and she speaks English and she believes like American values of like freedom and stuff. And she's teaching Chinese children in China. The CCP does not like that. You know what I mean? So a lot of these online education platforms were using teachers from America. They were getting funding from America through the NASDAQ and the stock exchange. So they had American influence on their ideas and their policies. So there's like this big concern that just hit the wave of the CCP. They're like, wait a minute, we have these online learning like companies that are operating outside of our K-12. You know what I mean? They're happening in like after school hours where these kids are getting education and we do not control that education. You see, like the CCP can control the narrative that gets flowed through K-12, but they can't really control what happens with these private corporations that are operating in after school hours. So like they were influenced. There was this potential that these kids would be influenced by America and like Western ideology, which would be like super against the CCP. And that is the main reason why that whole like online education got destroyed. But of course the CCP doesn't want to say that. So they're like, oh, you know, we just don't think it's really not that good that like the kids are working that hard. And, you know, like that was what I was reading in some articles. Like the CCP was worried about, oh, you know, like we're overworking these kids, you know, that's not good, da da da. And it's like, come on, dude, China, really overworking people? You've never been worried about that. All you want in China is to be the best at everything, the best in the Olympics, the best in education, the best in everything, working your people as hard as you can, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's my view on that.